Yet his body showed all manners of old scars, cuts, and bullet holes. It was the body of a fighting man, a killer. Christy concentrated with every ounce of her powers to mind link with Ryan. Her thoughts reached out through the dark and stormy night like the frail beam of a lighthouse, searching through the storm-wracked skies. On the other side of the hut, oblivious to anything else, Doc slept restlessly, his dreams filled with voracious creatures that scurried blood-eyed through moist, dark places and tore at living flesh. It was no more than a breath of wind on the cheek, the touch of a down feather as it settled on the mirrored surface of a woodland pool, the brush of a moth's wing, a whispered sentence in the dark corridor of a long-abandoned mansion. If Ryan had been linked to the gleaming banks of sophisticated pre-Skydark medical monitoring equipment, then there would have been a fractional change in the beeping and in the peaks and troughs of the printout of his life functions. It would have been marginal, but readable. Christy could almost see Ryan's fingers opening and closing again, his lips moving, his dry tongue pressing at his teeth. Beneath the closed lid, his good eye flicked from side to side, as though it were scanning a document, and his pulse quickened.
Ryan, I'm here, my dearest love. Are you there, Ryan?
Christy bit her lips so hard with the effort of trying to send the message across time and space that a worm of blood inched over her chin. She felt Ryan again. She saw him stir, groping toward the surface like a drowning man, clawing his way upward from the great mysteries that inhabit the abyss of the deeps.
Ryan, lover. Speak to me, lover. Please.
She felt him breathing faster, his hands both clenching, nails biting into his palms. Christy was rigid with tension, every muscle and sinew strained taut. The worm of blood had become a steady trickle, and her face was screwed up into a rigid mask.
Come on, Ryan. Hear me. Come on, lover.
Christy felt him, lying on his back, his head turning from side to side as though he was disagreeing with something someone had just said. Then, he opened his eye.
Eight days back, I figured you was ready for the boneyard.
Ryan sat on the porch of the little hut, enjoying an afternoon of watery sunshine, whittling away at a short piece of broken beechwood, trying with little skill to turn it into a whistle. He shifted sideways in a weak chair.
Careful there, Ryan.
Patty Maxwell was holding a chipped jug of rot-gut hooch that he traded for the previous morning. He dealt it for a skein of fresh-gutted catfish that he and Ryan had caught the day before, with an inbred family of moonshiners who lived in squalid poverty a few miles up a side creek. The old man had warned Ryan to sit inside the cabin and keep the Sig Sauer drawn, while the trading went on, with the family of a mean-eyed father, three sons with barely a single brain among them, and a pretty, vacant-eyed daughter.
Turn your back on them scum, and you end up picking steel out of your fucking spine.
Shit.
Ryan finally tired of his clumsy attempts at carving, and heaved the piece of wood toward the muddy edge of the water, now back at something close to its normal level. What had been a nameless stretch of river, he now knew was known locally as the Big White.
Wasn't no river here before the Rusky Nukes fucked the land. So they say. Land jumped and rolled, and water flowed up the hill and down the hill. Lakes turned dry, and the mountains sprung up. Now the Big White runs clear through to the city.
Is there a ville down there? Generally is where big rivers meet.
Yeah. Riverboat crossing there. Fancy ville. Get fucked every which way but clean. Gambling and whoring, even by a killer for a small handful of jack. Place is called Twin Forks. Of course, the trash calls it Twin Fucks.
Reckon that's where I'll make for. Soon as I got a bit more strength back.
Patty stood up from his chair, shaking his head in a nervous tic that got worse when he'd been drinking.
You ain't fit to shovel goose shit out of the pen, right?
Can't stay here forever. Got friends I should be going after. They'd be worried sick about me. Likely think I've gone west on that last train.
Over the week since he'd finally recovered full consciousness, Ryan had come to be oddly fond of his rescuer. Patty Maxwell was physically filthy, foul-mouthed, violent, short-tempered, racist, murderous, part blind, and most parts drunk. But he was also cripplingly lonely. He hawked a sort of living from fishing and some trapping, trading for liquor and for other supplies with infrequent passengers down the Big White. After 3 days, Ryan was able to stand unaided and was beginning to think about moving on as soon as he could. Patty had been vehemently opposed to that, arguing, shouting, and spitting to try to stop him. He'd even threatened Ryan with a smoothbore musket, forcing him to lift the little man by the throat and pin him to the wall of his hut with one hand. Ryan held the Sig Sauer in his other hand, pressing the 4.5-inch barrel into Patty's throat until the cartilage creaked and his red eyes watered with impotent terror. Now it was 8 days, and Ryan reckoned that he'd probably recovered about 70% of his strength. And Patty was drinking himself into a despondent stupor at the thought of being left alone once more.
We could make a go of it here, Ryan. Could clean the place up. Maybe build another cabin. Take in travelers. Get a couple of women to cook and whore.
I said the answer was no, Patty.
Maybe I'll come to Twin Forks with you, Ryan. You hold your fucking hand like...
Yeah, why not?
When you going? Next week? Week after that?
Sooner.
Ryan got up off the porch and stared toward the setting sun.
Day after tomorrow. Start at dawn. You're welcome to come along.
Really? Why the fuck's that?
Why what?
Why, you want a wore-out old shitter like me along with you, Ryan.
You saved my life, Patty. If not for you, I'd have drowned. Or just rotted away out on that mud bank. I owe you for that. So, come along to the Ville.
Never been to Twin Forks, except on me own. Be a real fucking treat, Ryan. Yeah, a real fucking treat.
Christy was also watching the sunset, sitting out on the balcony of her bedroom of the Grits and Greetings boarding house, a once white frame house that now squatted drunkenly close to the edge of the junction of the Big White and the mighty Sippy. The landlady had told them when they booked the rooms that it had been the flood of 1989 that had washed away some of the underpinnings and made the whole place lean like a Saturday night drunk on a friend's shoulder. The house dated back to pre-dark times, when Twin Forks had been a small, nameless settlement, 20 miles or so from the Sippy. Then the earth had moved, and now it was perched right on the edge of the great waterway. In another year or so, the way it looked, it would be floating off toward New Orleans. They'd been in Twin Forks for 4 days. The trip down, searching the banks of the Big White for some trace of Ryan or his corpse, had taken a total of 4 days, and ended in utter failure. But Christy insisted that her lover still lived, that she had felt a message from him over a week ago, felt him respond to her, sending out the Gaia-powered words. The rest of the party was more than happy to humor her by staying in the sprawling Ville, questioning travelers, particularly those who came in from the east, but none had any news of a one-eyed man, alive or dead. To pay for the 3 rooms that they'd booked, JB and Jack had taken on part-time jobs as bouncers at one of the biggest of several saloons at Gaudy's. The Montana Queen was run by a tough, silver-haired woman named Dolores Stanwyck. She had hired JB on the strength of his superior arsenal of the Uzi and the flechette-firing scattergun, and Jack on his incredible skill with blades. It was steady work, and they brought home enough Jack in hand to pay the landlady at the Grits and Greetings. Christy, Doc, and Mildred passed the days, asking the same question again and again around the Ville, getting the same shake of the head. Patty's coat had the same slightly phosphorescent green glint as Doc's frock coat, a somewhat sinister sheen that meant you could almost see your face in it from age and wear. The pants were hiked up in a bunch around Patty's midriff, seeming to belong to a much taller and bulkier man. The vest was torn and neatly mended, though no more than 2 of the buttons matched. To crown things, he was wearing a sporting derby, perched on the side of his head.
How do I look, Ryan?
You look a good deal smarter than me.
You sure I look all right now?
Ryan nodded. His private opinion was that the little man looked like a badly made-up corpse, but he wasn't going to hurt Patty's feelings by telling him that.
Fine. You gonna shave?
Have done.
You have? Maybe you missed a few places, Patty.
You reckon? Could go and do it again. Could stand a mite closer to the shittin' razor.
Ah, let it die. Time we was hitting the road into town.
They stopped at a dismal rooming house set back off the trail along an unmarked side road. Ryan would have easily walked past it if Patty hadn't grabbed at his arm.
Up here.
It looked as if it had once been the biggest of a complex of vacation cottages, perched on the side of a small lake. Ryan guessed the water might once have been crystal clear, filled with leaping rainbow trout. Now, a thick layer of green algae covered it like a